Hello. Welcome, everybody, to the Support Staff Podcast. My name is Christopher Miller. I'm your host for the duration of all of the Support Staff Podcasts. It is a great pleasure of mine to be able to have this podcast. It's something I've had in the works for at least the last 2 years, bouncing an awful lot of people just to get their ideas and opinions, and to be able to work with a lot of different schools and set that up throughout the country. Over the course of the next year, we'll be going conference to conference, talking to individuals from every conference throughout the country to give you a broad spectrum of what it's like to be a support staff member. The definition of support staff is the people who work for an organization to keep it running and support the people who are involved in the organization's main business. Support staff, such as administrators, carpenters, electricians, and other various jobs, are relied upon heavily by managers because of their support staff role. After that definition, you really don't get a grasp of what a support staff member does. But through the duration of these podcasts, you will see that a lot of people throughout all of walks of life work for support staff roles, such as recruiting, graphic design, creative directors, video directors, equipment managers, administrative roles, things of that nature. They are the behind the scenes unsung heroes of college football, college athletics, and athletics in general. So my biggest thing that I want to broadcast to you guys is what it takes to get a position such as these, because a lot of people, the most common questions that I've ever gotten is, how did you get into this role? What did you do? Is this something that you went to school for? My most common answer is no, I didn't go to school for this. As soon as I got out of school, I sold cell phones and sold jeans to preteens and tried to make goals that way, which was not the job that I was looking for whatsoever. But the fact is, it is a role that is very detrimental to athletic teams and football teams, with myself particular, that a lot of people don't know about. To give you a little bit of background on myself, I graduated from the University of Wyoming. As I was at Wyoming, I worked a marketing job, internship, and then I also worked for the football team as an undergrad video assistant / video filmer under Mike Weinman, who's currently with the Tampa Bay Rays. Worked for him 4 years, did both jobs, the marketing internship and the video internship with the football team, where I filmed end zone and sideline as well as some highlight stuff. Never really understood that it was an actual job, just kind of sheer stupidity on my behalf. Just showed up, got free stuff, got cool gear, got paid. So it was a fun job. And me being a sports nut, I got to be around a football team and go to bowl games and things of that nature. Once I graduated, found out that the real world sucked. And I worked for a cell phone company for a little bit. And then I worked at American Eagle. Like I said earlier, I sold jeans to preteens and tried to make cool shirts look awesome, all while looking douchey myself in really, I guess, mainstream clothing. One of the days that I was opening the store, my boss came in, who I worked with at Wyoming football, and he goes, "You don't need to be working here. Come be my assistant." A week later, I turned in my 2 weeks. I am currently trying to get it all situated out. Moved back to Laramie. I was just living in Cheyenne, Wyoming at the time. Moved back to Laramie around January, New Year. Started off brand new, fresh, and get my feet wet. Learn the Exos digital film editing system, which is something that we'll talk about a little bit later. Worked with that. Worked with Final Cut, which I had no idea how to do any of that. Again, it was something that was new to me and very awesome. So self-taught myself on a lot of that through Michael. And, 3 months later, he comes up to me and tells me that he has an underwater videography job in Thailand that he's going to be taking over. And he told them that I would be ready to go. Literally, my jaw had to have hit the floor by then, because I looked at him and said, "Are you sure about this?" And he said, "I've never been more sure about something in my life." So I took over. It had its trial by fire to begin with, but it's something, looking back on, that I would never trade for the world. It's brought me to a lot of different places, a lot of different schools, areas throughout the country that I cherish and things that I treasure throughout my life. And it ultimately grew me into the person that I am today. I started at the University of Wyoming, like I said, went to the University of Houston, worked there for 3 years under Tony Levine, David Gibbs, and Tom Herman. And then I got a call from Coach Calhoun after Coach Herman had come in, and he said, "You know what? We really want to bring you on." Me up there, and the rest is history. I've been at Air Force now, going on my fifth season this year, and it is the most rewarding job that I think I've ever had in my life, to be able to help a football team win, being the base layer of their foundation to make championships and wins and losses and things of that nature. It's very awesome, and to be able to broadcast that to the cadets that I work with and anybody that I work with is very awesome, because I like to hope that they have the the same charisma and vigor that I have for the Air Force football team. And I hope that they have it as well. A little bit about my job, being the director of video at first. What I do is I support the coaching staff with any video needs that they need, be it our film, be it other schools' film, be it, you know, practice film, things of that nature. If they want it, I will get a hold of it. We practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the week. And then we have Fridays off, and then Saturdays are our game days. We usually practice for about an hour and a half each day, and then we break that film down and make sure that the coaching staff has it available for them to be able to watch that night as soon as they roll in off the field for practice. We're breaking that down, like I said earlier, in the XOS digital editing system. There's also a DV Sport editing system that is out there for competitors and whatnot. We shoot on cameras that shoot onto SD cards. We make SD card drops throughout practice. Practice is typically 12 to 15 periods, so depending on the day, we'll pick halfway through, drop cards, run them inside, ingest the film, make sure it's all marked and properly edited so that we can intercut it together. And with an intercut, what it is taking a sideline shot and an end zone shot and putting them together so you see just one clip instead of two. Coaching staffs with the All 22 film, there will always be a sideline shot, which will be shot from the side of the field, and then an end zone shot, which typically most teams will shoot one end zone. A lot of teams that I know moving forward are now starting to shoot two end zones, so they have both offensive fronts and defensive fronts and backs for the coaching staff. Not only do we shoot practices, but we also shoot games. And it's very fun to be able to have a game day atmosphere and be able to coordinate who will be shooting what. And typically with my 15 cadets that I have, I will put two on sideline and I'll put two on each end zone because we shoot dual end zones. So that'll be six filmers. And then with the 14, 15 kids that I have, so that'll leave me with eight or nine kids left. They will go and be shooting highlight film, which we'll use for the creative aspect of things. But once we're done, the coaching staff will be able to watch that film at home on either on their laptop or on cloud, Thunder Cloud, to where they can watch the film through their phones, their tablets, or any device that is connected to the internet. Again, it's been a honor to be able to work for this coaching staff and Coach Calhoun. Just the amount of prestige and grit and integrity that this team has, it's very awesome to see a lot of things come to fruition. We shoot inside our indoor field. We also shoot outdoors as well. And then, you know, anything that we need to travel, we would always get that ready to set up meeting rooms on the road. Yes, on the road, we have two meeting rooms typically for our offensive and defensive side of balls. With that, typically we'll have two screens and two projectors in each room so that we can split it up the skill and lineman positions so that they can break down practice film and game film as well. And from there, we'll have a Friday night highlight, which I will put together from the creative aspect. And the team will be done after that. And then we'll get ready for Saturday, they wake up and eat, and then they'll go on the road. Not only do we get all the film ready as far as coaches film and things of that nature, but we also get film from other schools across our conference and then across the country as well. Every week we trade film in the Mountain West Conference with all the other 11 teams so that we have their film and they have our film. They will get an All 22 copy. They will also get a TV copy, and then they will also get game info and data from us as well so that their GAs can have a little bit more of a simplified life, being so we all know in the support staff world that GAs right above us on the low man on the totem pole. But with the trading of film and things of that nature, it makes it a lot easier to be able to work from home sometimes on a Sunday so we don't have to go in so early. But typically we have the mentality of first man in, last man out, just to make sure the coaching staffs are taken care of and they have everything they need, and that we are giving them our utmost respect and quality of time so that they can have everything that they need. You know, when I say that too, a support staff role, it's not a huge pat me on the back, the attaboy job. It is a lot of unsung hero positions, and the fact that you can do these jobs and not look for a lot of thanks is a small requirement, I would believe, to do things like this. You know, a good way to get into these positions is typically through internships or who you know. Ultimately, I think it boils down to your networking and your connections. With this video world, it is a world that a lot of people don't know about, and every time that we know we're at a cocktail party or we're at a party talking to friends and my wife says, oh, Chris is a works for the football team, the first question I always get, are you a coach? coach. And I have to explain to them, no, I'm not a coach. And then about 30 minutes later, I have to, try and figure out a way to wrap up my whole spiel. But overall, what I tell people is I get coaches film so that they can watch the practice and then they can watch the opposing team too to break down that film and help out with that. And a lot of people typically from that, they'll take a small understanding, but not an in-depth understanding of what actually happens. And on the flip side of that, my other job, being the creative director for the United States Air Force football team, I handle all the social media for the football team, all of the creative video, helping out with graphic design, more of the direction, if anything, of what we do creatively will go through me and also with Bo as well, helping out with things of that nature to make sure that we are getting the ethos of the brand of the football team so people know what we're doing behind the scenes as well as our day-to-day life. The creative director position is a very awesome position. You get a lot of freedom. Coach Calhoun trusts us with a lot of what we're doing. It's a very liberating experience to know that there's a lot of other people out there just like you trying to figure out what is the next cool thing or what is the next fun thing to engage the fans, engage the everyday 18-year-old, because not only are we trying to get the fans, we're also trying to get recruits as well. So it's a very interesting position, and it takes a lot of dedication to try and figure out what to do, how to do it, and what is the best venue and way to do that. I'm a big fan of it. There's no need to recreate the wheel. Just make some modifications so that you can perfect the wheel. And a lot of what we do is we do a lot of perfecting of the wheel. I think that we have come leaps and bounds from where we used to be. And I think that these positions, albeit that they may be new or a little older in their time, I think these are all positions that a lot of the younger generation is seeing that this is actually a very cool job and it's a very fun thing to be able to get into. So, but with that being said, I would really like to start introducing you to people who are also in support staff roles. Just have you get a feel for what they'd like. At any point in the podcast, if you'd like to hear from a certain person in the support staff, or if you'd like to hear anything from somebody that we don't touch base on, please shoot me a tweet, a DM. I'm at CM1984 on Twitter, and on Instagram, I am Houston C. Miller. Again, that's Twitter, CM1984, and on Instagram, it is Houston C. Miller. And also, I have my own website, chrismillermedia.com. If you'd like to visit that, you can shoot me an email at chris@chrismillermedia.com. But without wasting any more time, let's hop into this and see what it is to be a part of the support staff and what these people do every day in these amazing roles. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show into all the apps for everybody to listen to? And how can I make money from my podcast? The answer to every one of those questions is really simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with some great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you'll get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this Anchor ad. Anchor has made podcasting so much simpler than I ever thought it would be. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast making money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start. Join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.com/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. First interview on the Support Staff podcast is Steve Sen. He is a retired colonel finishing his 14th season in Air Force football and fourth as director of recruiting and player personnel. Steve previously was served as a junior varsity head coach and a varsity assistant officer at the United States Air Force. He's currently retired from active duty in 2009, where him and his wife live in Colorado Springs and his two children are currently in college. Steve is a very intricate part of Air Force football with his recruiting and how he brings young men in turns them into fantastic officers in the United States Air Force. Without any further ado, let's get into Steve Sen's podcast. All right, and with us today, we have Colonel Steve Sen, the Director of Air Force Football Recruiting. Colonel Sen has been in the Air Force, has retired, and has decided to grace Air Force football with his presence and his know-how of recruiting in the football world. So I just wanted to say thanks for coming in today, Colonel Sen. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having us. I'm actually Colonel retired. You don't have to call me Colonel. That makes me a little uncomfortable, but I appreciate it.
I hear it all the time with Coach Calhoun saying, Colonel, what do we got today?
Yeah, that makes me feel very old. Thank you.
Well, looking to the side where we sit on the walls, sports staff, it's a highlight of my day just to have you go, well, guys, well, we got some people coming in this weekend. So
I appreciate it.
So normally we have a pretty decent flow, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to start this off just to loosen you up a little bit. Five quick fire questions, okay?
Let's do it.
Just right off the top of your head. If you had the world's attention for 30 seconds, what would you say?
All right, so I'm standing in front of the world. I'd like to say, you know, in the words of Rodney King, can't we all just get along? It seems like there's a little bit of turmoil going on now, but, you know, realistically it comes down to, you know, just being willing to help each other out, you know, is what it comes down to. There's a lot of animosity out there. I don't want to get into a reason why politically, but, you know, if we're all just helping each other out, I think the world would be a better place.
I like that. That was good, especially for everything that's going on today. Question number two, what is in your fridge right now?
Currently in my refrigerator, I have barbecue chicken and Italian sausage that we grilled over the weekend. I have a bowl of quinoa that we use for our morning breakfast, and I have some orange juice, some yogurt, and some salad stuff.
That's perfect. Very healthy eater.
We try to.
If you could speak one word all day, what would that word be? It's a tough one, right?
That's a very tough one. Let's go with do it. I guess that's two words, but
hey,
how about
it works.
A phrase?
A phrase. I'll give you a phrase
Thank
on that
you.
One. Looking around this room, just real quick, give you 5 seconds, look around. How many pennies would fit in this room total?
Pennies, so if you're taking one penny is a millimeter times, looks like 5,000 multiplied by 60 square feet, you're going to be upwards of, looks like 5,255,322.
You're off by three, just
gotcha.
A heads up. No, that's one of the funny things that I find working at the Air Force Academy is everybody's very mathematical and very exact. We had to do that with the GAs and it was very,
very
funny. If you could live permanently in a roller coaster park or a zoo, which would you pick?
It'd have to be the zoo.
And the last question for you, what makes someone a hero?
Someone a hero is defined by who they've helped. Doesn't necessarily have to be from a emergency situation. You know, heroes could be, you know, your mom and dad. Hopefully I'm a hero to my kids, but it's really just defined by another individual.
I agree fully with that. It just depends on who is inspirational to you.
Correct.
As well.
Yep.
So now we got those out of the way. You're loosened up a little
All
bit.
All right, I'm ready to roll.
Give the listeners just a little bit of background about yourself, because obviously I've talked a little bit about you being a retired colonel. You've flown in the Air Force. Your wife is also was a graduate of the Air Force Academy. You know, just give a little bit of background about yourself, please.
Well, you know, kind of why I'm sitting here is really that leather football, probably in 1984. You know, had a real good senior season in high school, being able to get recruited by Air Force. That kind of set the stage for exactly why you're talking to me, believe it or not. You know, high school in Albuquerque, came up to the academy, played football, stayed back as a grad assistant, then I went to pilot training and flew airplanes for 16 years. So, you know, I had various assignments in C-5 Galaxies, the C-27 Spartan, the Gulfstream for the Learjet, and then finished off my career back here coaching football for 4 years. So ultimately it comes down to you know, really mom and dad, you know, getting me set at a young age playing that sport, and it allowed me to be where I'm at today.
From New Mexico, played football, came to the academy, did your years in the Air Force, flew basically everything from the sounds of it to
right.
The common person. Did you ever see yourself being a director of recruiting?
No, not at all. You know, it's in life, which most of your listeners will understand, the timing's everything. So it just, you know, one door opened at a time where another was closing. And, you know, lo and behold, Coach Calhoun, you know, came back as the head coach after Coach DeBerry retired. You know, Calhoun and I were teammates together back in the late 80s. Again, just timing's everything. He kind of asked me to stay on in a, you know, player personnel recruiting role. And I said, absolutely, let's do this.
What inspires you personally and professionally about this job?
Personally and professionally, it's all about these young men that are here currently at the academy. So obviously I have a vested interest as my university where I went to school at. I love football. I love the sport. I love seeing these young men come in as 18 years old and then leaving 4 years later as young men that are, you know, have a higher calling, be it serving their country absolutely for 5 years as a minimum. But just to see them grow, that gives me a smile on my face every single day I drive in to see how how they're changing.
Personally, I'd say too that that's one of the more rewarding things about the job is a lot of people think, well, you recruit these kids, they play football, and then they're gone. You get to watch them grow as, you know, young men to full grown men who get to go and either serve their country, go play in the NFL, do their years, and then go be in the private sector or the civilian sector, if anything. And I think that's extremely gratifying and very honoring and humbling to see as well.
Absolutely. So. There's no better feeling than when I get a phone call or somebody comes into my office that's graduated 10 years ago and say, Coach, thanks for mentoring me when I was a young cadet. You know, I really wasn't sure about what I was going to do, but it's kind of helped me down that career path, and I just get a great feeling out of that when they do that.
Yeah. No, it's amazing to see that. With your profession, director of recruiting, was this something that you knew immediately how to do it, or were you self-taught, and how did you learn that if you were self-taught?
So I was in a executive assistant role for 2 years prior to assuming this duty. So I had a chance to help out on recruiting weekends and, you know, just being able to discuss the type of recruits that Air Force is recruiting. So it wasn't like I was starting from scratch, but you know, it definitely helps out when you have some of these coaches that had worked at other programs or had been recruiting coordinators here at Air Force to give me some suggestions. And then really it's just letting, or Coach Calhoun giving me the freedom to kind of run it the way that I'd like to run it, to where he's not micromanaging me. And then just being able to provide all the coaches with quality items, i.e. recruits, to where they can take a look and get this program better.
And I think that's one of the awesome things about this whole program is Coach Calhoun, the trust and just the full here you go kind of keys of the car mentality of you can do this, you know what you're doing, I want you to help the team out, and you've perfected this to a point of where I trust you that much. I see it with our creative team, I see it with your recruiting, and I think that speaks volumes about, you know, your management and things of that, no micromanaging, things of that nature.
Absolutely. And you know, I've been around him long enough to know that, you know, when he says something, I kind of get it, that okay, we probably need to do it this way. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I'll go and change that you know, right away to make it the way he wants it.
Talking about your past, talking about how you've gotten into this, being self-taught, what are some advice or some pointers that you would give to somebody trying to get into a director of recruiting position?
So probably, you know, with a young person starting out is just, you know, it's like anything, know your job. You have to have very good job knowledge, and that stems from, you know, discussing with other people. It stems from reading books. It stems from looking at videos. Whatever that is, you want to immerse yourself into, you know, a recruiting role. You're looking at 24/7. You're looking at, you know, rivals.com. You're reading all of the ESPN articles on recruiting, and I think that'll get you going at least to start from a foundation. And then it's really, you know, surrounding yourself with people that have that same desire to make a program better, because ultimately that's it. My job is to identify recruits that can play Division I football and get Air Force to bowl games, beat Army, Navy every single year. That's my number one goal, is doing that. And you know, as far as a young person getting into the business, if you can, you know, set that as your goal for your program, wherever that is, to make it better every single year, I think you're halfway there.
Yeah, and I think that has a strong track record for you with your recruiting and bowl games and wins to just progress over the years. And I think a key point that you hit on too is surrounding yourself with people that you know are going to help you out. And I think with a lot of young kids is going to the AFCA conferences, things of that nature, going to director of ops conferences, just to surround yourself with people in that profession, ask them questions, and hopefully get in the right path where you can hopefully start out as an assistant and work your way up to a director. Because I don't think a lot of people are just all of a sudden plucked out of the, you know, everyday life to life and thrown into a director of recruiting unless it's a small, you know, NAIA school or something of that nature and not having the background knowledge of it. What is one thing, if you could make this industry better, what would you do to help progress us from where we're at now?
You know, it's, and you've seen it, it's apples to oranges. So you're talking a non-Power 5 school versus a Power 5 school. Should there be equity on all fronts when it comes to recruiting, from a budget standpoint, from a, you know, necessity standpoint? You'd like to think it's that way, but realistically, we know it's never going to be that way. So you have to kind of take it for what it's worth and deal with what you've got, you know. And if it's making one thing better for, you know, all of us in the recruiting realm, you know, I think it's just more of the instantaneous contact slash film evaluations that you can make on prospects, somehow making that to where it's a lot more efficient. You know, you're not limited by, you know, internet feeds or anything like that, but to where you can do your job and evaluate recruits and, you know, make good recommendations to the staff.
Yeah, because I think we're far from having like a level playing field recruiting wise ever, because of, like you said, different programs have different resources. They have more people. Like your recruiting department, you have you and Mitch Browning, and then you have a student assistant or student manager per coach, correct?
Correct.
So that'd
correct.
Be 15 student managers that
exactly.
come in and help out.
Yep.
Where other programs, they have two per coach, or they have a full recruiting department of 5 to 6 people, and you know, they're working on graphics and things of that nature. Where we may be undermanned, but we still turn out a great product and we turn out a pretty decent team every year, I think personally. So no, I think that's great to hear as well. It's interesting to look at it from that perspective, because a lot of teams do have different levels of what they can do and how they can do it. But I think one thing you said is, how can we make something better? We have our graphic book, you have our, you know, what we've done over the years, and progressively every year we sit down and we talk about what can we do better to make ourselves more, you know, appealing, more advantageous to beat the two services academy schools on the East Coast. And I think we do a pretty dang good job of that. And that fully attributes to you because of how you manage our whole program and things of that nature. So
it's... No, I appreciate it, Chris. You know, it really comes down to, you know, using the resources that you have. Don't sit there and feel sorry for yourself that, you know, well, shoot, Alabama's got this and Georgia's has got that and so on. You've got to make do with what you've got and, you know, never say we can't. Find a way to do it. And, you know, use the resources that you have. And I think you'll do good things on a yearly basis.
One thing I always hear you say is no need to ever recreate the wheel. We can always just make different modifications to the wheel to make ourselves better.
And yes.
I think that's a key thing
you
always say. Tell me what a normal day looks like for you during recruiting season.
Sure. So for instance, this morning I come in, you know, I check my email. First thing I'm looking at is, you know, obviously emails from the head ball coach, voicemails from the head ball coach, texts from the head ball coach. That's my number one priority, is seeing what he's got. Then it'll trickle down to the coaching staff, specifically if they say, hey, we need you to check out this kid. We want you to run see what his GPA is with this transcript that I just sent you. So priority in the morning is really getting the coaches taken care of. And then at that stage, it kind of transitions into new emails that I've received from recruits, and then kind of evaluating them from a time standpoint. Realistically, I don't get to watch the videos until the afternoon. In the morning, I'm still working on organizing all the correspondence and everything for the afternoon student helpers when they come down at 3 o'clock, so that I'm not scrambling at 2:55, you know, trying to get them organized. You know, once the afternoon hits, then I'm really rolling into watching recruiting film, have it organized by position, to where I'll sit there and watch. My goal is to get through 100 to 150 recruits a day. Specifically today, I'm looking at slot receivers, to where I watch them all in a row so I can get a good visualization on, you know, whether this kid can play at the Division I level or not. Once the day wraps up, kind of get things tidied up, and then just be ready for texts that come at night from the coaches while they're on the road. It really doesn't stop as far as recruiting goes. And then boom, just getting ready for the next day.
I mean, that's just a mouthful all in itself. Just saying, first you have to deal with the coaches, and then you have to deal with your staff, and then you have to deal with watching video and things of that nature. Again, this is a crazy world in the sports staff area, but I think that, again, you have this down to almost a science, if you will, even though there are areas where you say we can constantly get better. But I think that knowing this is possibly one of our best recruit classes we've had in the last couple of years, being here now my 5th season, just seeing the amount of 3 stars, but when it boils down to it, stars really don't mean anything, but the amount of talent that we have coming in and seeing the kids that buy into our program from what you and Mitch show them and what we show them as a football team, I think is just very awesome to see. Last thing I want to say, Steve, you know, I think that you do a fantastic job as the director of recruiting here at the Air Force Academy, and I think that it's a completely different ball of wax when it comes down to it against other schools with service academies, extra weekends, things of that nature, and you know, the whole thing of actually serving your country in the military. That's a whole nother aspect that I think really touch base with recruits. What are some of the things that you try and do to tell recruits, hey, this isn't as bad as people make it out to be. You're still serving your country and you get to play football and you're set up for the rest of your life. So what are some of the things, like talking points, that you talk about with recruits on that?
Yeah, so that's difficult, you know, getting into a 17-year-old's mind, you know, from a service before self standpoint. That's something that you kind of have to cultivate in the recruiting process, to where you can kind of tee it up for them. I think the majority of the recruits know that, you know, academically, it's definitely a school that's on par with the Ivies when it comes to the academic load. And then what we try to share is that, hey, you're just not a robot going to be marching around with a weapon, with boots in the sand. No, that's not us. We're, you know, we're the Gucci service when it comes to, you know, serving the nation. We fight, you know, our wars at 35,000 feet for the most part. You know, very, very liberal vacation policy with the Air Force. But it's really the whole key that I've seen, Chris, in my time that I've been here, is you have to get the recruit. And you have to get that support person, be it a mom and dad, be it a head ball coach, a grandma and granddad, on our campus to where they can see what this university is about. And then more specifically, having that recruit interact with our current players to see that they are normal university students, but they are here for a higher calling. And the light doesn't go off coming in the door as an 18-year-old freshman, but more than likely, obviously by the time they're graduating 4 years later, they've kind of got this service before self figured out, and they're going on to greater things.
Yeah, I mean, $500,000 education. You get to have a full-time job immediately after college. You know, you're making upwards of $70,000 a year. And you have a five-year...
A guaranteed job is what I use.
A guaranteed
job. Some people call it a commitment, but I call it a guaranteed job.
And you know, a lot of things, too, with these kids that are coming up through recruiting, they want the chance of the NFL. You can have the chance of the NFL with any of the service academies. If anything, the guaranteed job is a fallback net for them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the soundest things I've ever heard before in college recruiting, because you don't ever have anything guaranteed. And the fact that you can have a guaranteed job immediately after graduating, people are actively coming after you. I think that just speaks volumes. Like for myself, I was recruited by the Air Force Academy in high school, in 10th grade, as a quarterback. My junior year, the guy comes back and he goes, "You can't get in because of your grades." And
Chris, I saw your film. I don't think you would have made it athletically either. Sorry.
Oh, you see, that was my mascot film that you saw when I was the Yellow Jacket of Black Hills State.
I'm sorry, you're right. I didn't see that.
Bigger head, shoulders a little bit more broad, not as muscular. But Steve, again, I appreciate the time.
You bet, Chris.
I think that your job is a very intricate role in the support staff, and a lot of people don't really know what you do or how you get into it. But with your insight, I feel that the average listener, if they're wanting to get into this, they have some great insight of how to get into this position. And if you don't follow Steve Sen already, Steve is on Twitter at
Coach Steve Sen.
At Coach Steve Sen on Twitter. Follow him. He tweets out basically anything Air Force, anything that he finds appealing. Also, if you don't know us about Steve, he is a record holder at the United States Air Force Academy. He caught what? Not one, not two, not three, but four touchdown passes.
That's what they tell me.
In bowl games. And who are those two teams again?
We played Ole Miss my senior year, and then Arizona State my sophomore year.
And if for the listener, when we have recruiting weekends, this is the highlight of my weekend, because Coach Calhoun goes through and talks about everybody on the coaching staff, most of those people being from the Air Force Academy, and Coach Sen being one of the long-lasting people from the Air Force Academy, and I would say possibly Coach Calhoun's favorite, but he doesn't like to play favorites, but nudge, nudge, Coach Sen definitely is that. So again, if you don't follow Coach Sen or Colonel Sen, Colonel Retired Sen.
Thank you, Chris.
Please follow him on Twitter. And thank you again for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you.
Weddings should be memorable, but not for the groom's lack of style. That's why our friends at Black Tux design rental suits and tuxedos that you'll love wearing at your wedding. So if you end up getting featured on your list of 23 epic wedding failures for, say, your reception table catching on fire, or your DJ playing Let's Get It On during the father-daughter dance, at least you know you'll look good for your close-up. I know for sure if I had these guys during my wedding, it would have made it a lot easier and probably a lot less stressful for my wife and myself. But the best part about the Black Tux rental is that they have an easy online ordering process that'll bring your suit or tuxedo straight to you at home. Just pick a style at theblacktux.com and request a free at-home try-on so you can feel the fit and the quality before you commit to the suit. And if online isn't your style, they have showrooms all over the country where you can find your fit and plan your look for your day. From there, they'll ship you your order 2 weeks before your wedding so you can check it at home one last time. Talk about commitment. Over 5,000 five-star reviews across Wedding Wire, The Knot, and their own website agree you won't find another rental experience or design like the ones that you'll find at Black Tux. Grooms, listen up. If you want your wedding to be remembered for the right reasons, visit blacktux.com/listen. That's blacktux.com/listen for $20 off your purchase. Walk, don't run, to theblacktux.com/listen to find your look for you and your crew. That's blacktux.com. Formal wear for the moment. Next up on the podcast is Head Equipment Director Scott Richardson. Scott is the Equipment Supervisor and Head Football Equipment Manager at the United States Air Force Academy. He was promoted to his current position August 2013. He was previously with the University of Kansas, where he got a start, and then he was moved on to the Carolina Panthers. Blessed with the opportunity to come to the United States Air Force Academy and jumped on the opportunity. Scott is a close friend of mine and just a buddy that I see every day. The amount of things that he gets to do is very interesting, and the fact that not a lot of people get to know about what an equipment manager does is very mind-blowing to me. So without further ado, let's get into the podcast with Scott Richardson, the head equipment manager for the United States Air Force football team. All right. Hello and welcome to the Support Staff Podcast. Today, I have Scott Richardson, the director of Air Force football equipment and a close friend of mine. Thank you for coming on today, Scott. Really appreciate
great
it.
Great to be here with you, Chris.
So obviously, I've given the listeners a little bit of background on you, but why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and how you've gotten to this point?
Long path with several different stops kind of along the way to get here. 2006 grad of the University of Kansas. Grew up right around Lawrence, Kansas, so always knew growing up that I would, you know, go to school there. It's what everybody wanted. I was always about it. That was always what we were going to do. Getting ready to go into school, obviously, like any college kid, I needed a job. Just so happened through a family friend that I knew had some connections, and we became good friends. My family became good friends with the head equipment guy at the University of Kansas, their football program. So it was literally about 2 weeks before school started, he just approached me and said, "Hey, you want a job?" Which was obviously a lot better than, you know, doing fast food or doing some other
slinging burgers.
Odd, yeah, some other kind of college job. So obviously, and playing sports growing up, you know, it sounded awesome. So I went to work 2 weeks later. I'd never really played football other than, you know, to in touch with your buddies. So nothing organized. You know, get out there, first day, just lost, trying to see how everything works. Really, it's one of those, it was fun, it was easy. Had a good time being around the guys, had a good time being around, you know, the players and the coaches, staff, people you got to meet. So before I know it, I'm doing sports management, which always interests me anyway. Mm-hmm. Graduate, looking for a job. What can I do? Hey, this is what I know a lot of people, and before long I'm getting offered an opportunity to go work for the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
Which was obviously amazing.
Yeah.
Jumped at the chance. First time that I had ever then moved away from home. Went out to Charlotte, North Carolina. Quickly, like, just loved the place, loved the town.
Seems like a great organization to work with.
Great organization to work with. In fact, you know, we're 10 years later, and I can look at the staff directory and know 80% of the guys that are still there. And what's great is you see guys that were at your level, or, you know, were also an intern, or were the third guy on a mm-hmm. staff of over their careers, sticking with the Panthers, have now become in charge of their respective divisions. So director of communications is still there. The video guys are all still there. Player ops, a lot of those guys are still around. So it's cool to still know a lot of the faces back there.
And see their advancement through the years.
See the head equipment guy is still there, head trainer. So it's awesome to look at the sidelines, still see a lot of familiar faces and still pull for them and root for them. After a year and a half there, just spent another year with the Panthers and got a call from the Air Force Academy from Dan Sermine, who's long time been here, and basically offered me a job right off the bat. Said it's between you and another guy from the Dallas Cowboys I'm kind of talking with, and whoever can get here first, that's what we're going to do. And about a week or so later, I'm loading up a U-Haul and driving to Colorado Springs, and been here for 10 years. So it's great. It's been great to not have a lot of military background, not have a lot of interaction with service members and guys in the military, and 10 years later to look back at the relationships you have, and it's a cool cool atmosphere. So been here for 10 years.
Okay.
Went from assistant to the head equipment manager, and so still here.
And it's crazy too, like you're saying, like going from an area where you don't have interaction with military, you're, you know, just a civilian, to, you know, just the other day we went and saw something that was pretty top secret that not a lot of people know about, and now we get to do things like that
pretty regularly, A-10s, F-35s, AC-130s. It's something that you don't have in your everyday life that you really don't take for granted, and you're pretty grateful for it.
Yeah, you know, you look back and actually text a bunch of my buddies just saying, like, here's what I did the other day, and it's pretty neat. You know, obviously, not everybody gets those opportunities. I can, you know, look back to several years ago, we went to Arizona and got an awesome opportunity to tour some things, and obviously you were there, was able to get my dad in a simulator to fly, and I was able to fly a simulator, which is a very, very
it's cool, pretty awesome and unique opportunity.
So yeah, it's been great. And the relationships, you know, you think about over your whole career, that's everything to where you want to go, and looking back and, you know, seeing what some of your kids and players that what they go on and do is always pretty cool.
No, it's what they end up doing. It's very gratifying, you know, talking with Colonel Sen and a couple other people, just seeing the cadets rise through their years, see them come in as a boy, go out a man and go into the Air Force and have them come back. Like, you've had a lot of cadets come back with the Air Power Legacy Series, and you had them be included with the uniforms and things of that nature. And I think that's got to be a pretty awesome thing for yourself.
Yeah, and that's the best part about all this is when you reach out to guys that you used to take care of, or, you know, guys that used to be around your program a lot. In the past, it's been a lot of players. What's going to be rewarding about doing this, the uniform we're going to do this year, is that it's a lot of actually my managers. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of kids that literally worked directly for you, and seeing their success and seeing what they do, get to hear from them and interact with them more has been awesome. And yeah, it's always a positive of the job.
It's kind of like a where are they now that you used to do, like, on VH1 kind of thing. That's pretty awesome.
As much as you love to tell that story, a lot of what they are doing now is classified, which makes it cooler, so can't really divulge what they're doing. But yeah, it's great. Great to catch up with those guys.
No, it's definitely an aspect of the job that it's pretty awesome to see from our behalf and be able to talk about that with friends and family and things of that nature. To know what you do for your job, obviously you said you were kind of self-taught, but you also learned your craft from the equipment managers and the director at Kansas along the way with the Carolina Panthers. There's two. So what are some things that you would say to somebody who's trying to get into the industry that they need to, I guess, learn or have a general knowledge of before they get into this?
There's a lot of great guys out there in the industry, in the profession. As a student, the best thing you can do is just keep your eyes and ears open and speak less, listen, kind of watch what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think too, a lot of the guys that I've been around that are successful in this business, there's just a certain level of professionalism with everybody that they encounter, whether it's a player, whether it's coach, whether it's an administrator. So carrying yourself the right way. And obviously then at the end of the day, you know, you're here to take care of your athletes, take care of your players that are there. And I think for me and for the guys that I was around, you know, Jeff Himes is the head equipment manager for University of Kansas. Heimer's been there for, gosh, 30 years. And I mean, started as a young guy. He's still a young guy. He's got a lot of years to keep doing it. But, you know, seeing how he took care of his players, seeing, you know, game day is always a production. It's a production for, you know, for your administrators that are walking boosters and stuff through the locker room. It's, you know, for your coaches to walk in and realize this is their day to show what all the work that whole week has been for. So how they would present the locker room to the players on game day was always something that I took from that. And at the same time, you know, getting the opportunity in the Carolina Panthers from Jackie Miles, who is just the workaholic all those NFL guys are. I mean, it's such a grind, but Jackie's been doing it for a long time and actually retired, and when I say workaholic, he retired and well deserved, was looking on to doing some other things, and he's out of work for about 2 months and takes a job with the New York Giants.
So he loved his job that much that he couldn't stay away from it that long.
So he's back, he's working again. But how those, and same thing, they were a lot alike in how they carried themselves, the type of people that they were when they were interacting with their players or their coaches or their administration. I think there's a lot to learn, just, and then it is from a knowledge base, they have years of experience. So the best thing to do is just to watch and learn.
Now, do you feel like if somebody was to call, say yourself, or say, you know, a couple of equipment managers and say, would I be able to talk to you? You think that'd be something that they'd be fairly open to? Or do you think you need to make some connections and then be able to call that person? So say like Jeff Himes and your manager at the
Jackie
Panthers. Yeah. Do you think that would be something to where you would need to network and then possibly make a call to these heads? Or do you think this would be something to where you could email them and say, hey, I'm an upcoming equipment manager, I worked here, I would love to get into this industry. Is there anything I could do to help?
It's all about who you know. And so if you're, you know, still talking about giving advice to a young person, is, you know, if you're working at a university or a school, is to really then rely on, build good relationships, rely on, you know, other people that are around you to maybe introduce you to some more people. But the value of networking just can't be understated, whether it's in our profession or any profession. I mean, you got to, again, carry yourself mm-hmm. in a good way, present yourself in a good way. And, you know, you're selling yourself every day when you're starting out. And basically for guys that have been around too, they know who they're going to stick their neck out for. And if they're going to recommend you for a job to another one of their buddies or clearly somebody they know in the industry, they're not going to do it just because you ask them to. They're going to recommend the best people because they're not going to, they're going to hear about it. They're going to hear about it from their boy down the line if it wasn't a good connection. So yeah, the best thing you can always do is just make a good impression, because I have it in my job. I know they have it in their jobs.
Oh yeah.
I get 20 emails a semester about kids that want internships. I don't know who you are. I mean, I see your name. Unless there's a right need, the best thing that could have come with that email is, here's a recommendation letter from this person who you know. So that would, I guess that would be a...
just a little bit of backing from that person to help out with them. So obviously there's a lot of things that excite you about your job. What are a couple things that really make you excited to be an equipment manager? Like, is it the creating new uniforms? Is it being around the cadets and seeing them through the years? Just elaborate a little bit on that.
It's, without a doubt, it's the 80-hour work weeks in the fall. I mean, that's just what I love.
Busting our ass being the first in, last out.
You know, those are certainly things that are part of it that you gotta appreciate the grind of it all. But I would say I'm 36, but my God, it's been doing this for feels like a long time. I know that there's a lot more guys that have a lot more experience. I think that's what's unique about here is what the kids go off and do, what your former players, what your former managers go off and do. That's exciting to build those relationships with them when they're here and then see what they go out and do. Really, at least in the present time, what is exciting and fun is to work with vendors, work with other manufacturers and come up with an alternate helmet design, sit around the office and kick around ideas and come up with something then that when it is put out there so far, mm-hmm. we've been successful in on the field and then successful with the looks we've come up with and things we've done. So I think that's always a fun part. I would say on the daily would be the interaction we have with with the players. I mean, with the people around the department, it's a different environment. It's not your office setting. So it's fun to get up. From all over the country, kind of get to know them as well. So I would say those are the best aspects.
Okay. Obviously, you've talked about what happens during a season, what you've done in your past, what excites you about your job. Kind of walk through what a normal, like, in-season day is for you. Meeting at 7 a.m. And
season's a grind. I mean, and that's become like a fun hashtag for people on Twitter. And it's a reality. And if you're working in athletics and when you're in season. So for us, it's, or for me personally, it's getting in here then about 7, heading down for a 7:15 staff meeting, kind of getting the direction for the day from the head football coach, going over practice schedules, practice plans. That meeting kind of draws out a little bit sometimes with recruiting things and different things that are going on, which as somebody that's involved in the program, it's always good to maybe see the direction that we're heading in the future. But typically then when you get out of those meetings, you got your marching orders for the day. Mm-hmm. You know what's going to happen as soon as the players show up. You know what's, you know, the expectations are on the field. So it's really from that point is preparing for what's going to happen that afternoon. Usually by the time I get back from that meeting, the rest of my staff's in. This room is bustling with people doing laundry, other sports coming in for different things. But for our staff and for the football staff specifically, then it's a quick little meeting about, hey, what do we need to get done? We're going on the road. It's what trunks got to get packed. What do we got to do for the semi? For home games, a little unique too. I mean, every game for us is a road game because our home stadium's 2 miles away. So whether we're going 200 miles or 2 miles, it's still moving everything for game day. So a lot of our work is then also done off site. So it's kind of meeting, figuring out what we need to do, sending some of the assistants off to take care of some of those things and really kind of guide the ship in terms of game day setup, things like that. But and then we got practice. So practice in the afternoon, hour before practice, we're out there getting set up, practice hour and a half to 2 hours sometimes. And then 45 minutes to an hour afterwards, either dealing with equipment issues, you know, things that happen during practice, and then also kind of guiding the manager staff and what needed to happen and what directing them with what is going to go down with the practice plan. So, and yeah, by the time that's all said and done and you're ready to go home, it's been a 12-hour day.
And I think that's the interesting thing too, is with your equipment staff, you don't only just do equipment, you also do all the waters. You're kind of an all-inclusive there. And you have what, 20 to 25 kids staff-wise, give or take, you know, losing a few throughout the year. During practice, they're doing, you know, equipment, water, helping out with managerial things for coaches, whatever they need to do. During a game, what does your day look like?
Game day for us, we look at the kickoff time and work backwards. Mm-hmm. So kickoff time, we're here 5 hours before. Primarily for us, mostly for my sleeping habits the night before the game and for literally just peace of mind and sanity, we've pretty much buttoned up everything. You know, the jerseys are all out, everything's tightened and clean and shine, everything. Helmets are ready to go. But it's really just coming in 5 hours before, kind of going over your checklist of here's what we need to do with the managers, setting up the sideline. And you never know what's going to pop up on a game day, whether it's weather related, whether it's preparing.
Yeah. 2 hour weather delay. Yeah, we had like close to 6 hours of weather delay this last season.
We've, in the 10 years that I'd been at the academy, had not had a delay. And then the last two seasons we've had, I think, 5 or 6, which has just been
major wrench into the game for you, because not only do you have to get all the equipment ready for them, but then you're having to bring them back into the locker room, and we need to feed them, we need to get them hydrated, you know, rollers, everything, and then you're making adjustments as well, right?
Yeah, because obviously if you're sitting there in a weather delay, there's weather going on out on the field, so how does that affect the playing conditions? How is that affecting what sometimes it's even the communication stuff, which a lot of times in a lot of programs falls on the equipment staff. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate that we do have a dedicated headset guy, but at the same time you're worried about what issues might arise and yeah, like, you know, we're in Colorado too, we're dealing with extremes on snow and wind and rain and certainly lightning, so it's be prepared for everything, and that's where the 5 hours comes in, is literally just sort of a peace of mind thing. If the best thing I can say is that, you know, the team arrives 2 hours before, and if for an hour and a half all I've done is walk around and do nothing, that's not a bad thing, because
mission accomplished, you're prepared. For you.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing is teams walking in and you guys are running around doing some last minute thing that you didn't think of. So we're always trying to stay ahead of things and make sure that we've done our job so that the guys can go out there and do theirs.
Obviously you've given pretty thorough background on what you should be able to do or want to be able to do to try to make it into this industry. What we like to typically end with or start with at times is 5 random questions.
Oh, God.
Okay. So 5 random questions, just real quick fire questions that we ask off the top of our head. So I'll ask them and then you just give me an answer. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You have the world's attention for 30 seconds.
Oh, God.
What do you say?
I think I've used 5 right here. I'm just trying to think of something. Oh, God. I'm terrible at these types of questions.
Free Bud Lights on me.
Free, yeah. yeah. Every day is happy hour. How about that? Yeah.
Okay.
Happy hour every day.
There you go. I love
God,
it.
God, I'm terrible.
No, it works. It works. If you could disinvent one thing, so any invention, anything that's been made out there, if you could disinvent one thing, what would it be? Any of like your kids' toys that annoy you?
There you go. That is a good.
See?
I was just going to say, this is where the part of your podcast is. Everybody starts tuning out. A former coach gave my daughter a piano that she plays nonstop, and I wish he would have thrown that thing away when they moved. So I'm looking for Jake Moreland and I'm trying to fight him. There you go.
I'm pretty sure he's still at Western Michigan, so
yes,
we can get
I'll
his mailing
him.
Address.
Yes.
If you could speak one word all day, what would that word be?
Well, with our job, it's usually okay.
It's
yes,
true,
coach.
Though. It's true, because I feel like you can never say no. It's like,
yes,
just find a way to make it work.
Yes.
So when you're alone, do you dance crazy when no one's looking?
I do.
You do?
Often.
Because I know from being over your house, you do dance with the kids when music's on. And Greta has an amazing dancing style. And I'm guessing that she gets that from you.
Shake your booty. Yeah.
Okay.
No, yes. And sometimes not even when I'm alone. You can ask my wife. There's a lot of inappropriate dancing.
Hey, man.
Often.
Whatever makes the marriage work.
Got to keep it exciting.
Question 4. Would you rather live permanently in a roller coaster park or a zoo?
In a zoo.
Why?
My kids love the zoo, so they'd come visit me if I had to live there.
Cheyenne Mountain Zoo
is pretty awesome.
Pretty flipping awesome.
Be there in a couple days. I'm sure the kids will drag me out there.
And last question: what are you freakishly bad at?
That goes into
podcasting
answering rapid fire questions on a podcast. And then I would also say dancing, because I dance crazy when nobody's around.
That's true.
If you get me in public dancing, it's bad news.
Well, again, Scott, I don't think I've ever stressed this enough to you, but I think that you are one of the greatest in this profession. Not only do I see you bust your ass every day with everything you have going on and the product that you put out on the field, not only on the practice field, but the game field as well. I think that you are a fantastic equipment manager and I think you're a great friend, and just want to appreciate you for coming in today and having the podcast with me.
Okay.
So
if you have me do it again, I would say don't give me five rapid fire questions.
Okay, maybe next time we'll put a 12 pack of beer in you and then we'll make it work.
Oh, then I'll be able to rattle those off real quick.
Okay. And Scott, just so if people want to follow you, possibly ask you a question, you are on Twitter, right?
We're on Twitter with the Air Force page at AFFBEQ. You can follow us there. We're trying to send out a bunch of our stuff soon, very soon. You'll get to see the creation for 2019 football season. So we're excited.
It is very awesome. I will say that having worked alongside you guys with this, it's very sweet to see it go from the, you know, preliminary stages to where it is now. And having you guys actually fly out to Wisconsin to meet with the, you know, the producer of the helmet and things of that nature. It's very cool to have seen it come as far as it did. So
fun to see how they're doing things and how they're going to take care of us on this helmet. It should be another good one.
All right. Again, well, thank you, Scott. Really do appreciate it. And that is it for today.
No problem, buddy.
Thank Steve Sent and Scott Richardson for both coming in and doing the podcast with us. Thoroughly enjoyed their conversation and insights that they had about being a support staff member and what it takes to be in the support staff as well. Please tune in with us for part two of the support staff podcast featuring Sarah Goolsby, administrative assistant for Air Force football, and Bo Savage, assistant creative director and lead graphic designer for the United States Air Force football team. Again, thank you for listening today. Give us a follow on Twitter at SupportStaffPC. Again, that is SupportStaffPC. Any comments, questions, concern for the good of the order will always be appreciated. And please give us a 5-star rating or pass this on to your friends out there in the support staff world. This is Chris Miller. Just want to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll hear from you soon.